listen. This is WHRW 90.5 FM, Binghamton.
Good afternoon. This is Tarek Abdelazim, host of Civil Discourse. You're listening to WHRW 95.5 FM, and this is Binghamton, New York.
95.5.
On March 17, 2003, 2 days before the invasion of Iraq was launched, four members of the Magnificent Catholic worker community of Ithaca, New York, walked into the waiting room of the local Army Marine Recruiting Center and carefully poured their own blood on the walls, the windows, the posters, cardboard mannequins of soldiers, the door, and the American flag. They brought pictures of Iraqi mothers and children into the recruiting center, along with a letter from American peace activists in Baghdad, Iraq, who called on peace activists in the U.S. to nonviolently resist the promise of shock and awe. They read a statement, they knelt in prayer, and awaited the authorities. The four, Daniel Burns, Peter Dumont, Claire Grady, and Teresa Grady, were then arrested and charged by the local DA with felony criminal damage to property. I have the great privilege to have all four of the defendants here in the studio today for a lively discussion. What we're going to do is discuss both of their case that was ended in a mistrial in Tompkins County Court. But even though one jury failed to convict them, the federal government stepped in 4 months later, and they now stand trial in a federal district court here in Binghamton, New York, coming up this summer. Thank all four of you for joining me today.
Thank you for having
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. What I'd like to do, you guys have been termed the St. Patrick Four because your actions did occur on March 17th. We're going to try to get into some of the details of the case, follow it, and so we have a better understanding as to where you stand today. And then we're going to have an open discussion, and perhaps if we have time at the end of the show, we'll invite a call or two. I want to start out with this general question. The four of you decided to represent yourselves in this case here in Tompkins County. So you were actually conducting the jury selection. And during that process, I read from reports that were done by Bill Quigley, a legal counsel, that you were very direct and candid. You admitted that, yes, you committed the actions as described, but you were arguing whether or not such actions could actually be defined as legal. So this is where I want to start out. How did you argue this? And on what ultimately were you basing your defense?
Okay, could I take that?
This is Teresa.
I'm Teresa. I think the best way to look at this is to imagine a scenario where you have a man walking down the street and he looks up into a house that he has no connection to whatsoever, and he sees a child in the house in the window upstairs, and he decides to go to the door and knocks on the door. There's no answer. He breaks a window and gets into the house and actually walks out of the house with the child under his arm. Now, the man, in technical terms, has broken and entered, and he has abducted a child because he knows he's not been given permission to do so. When the picture becomes clear that there was a fire in the house, no longer is his act criminal? And that's really the issue. Is our act criminal, and are we to be defined as criminals in our society, or should we be considered heroes, or rather, I mean, maybe that's stepping a little too far, but just to clarify for the general public that most people would not see that man as a criminal when the information of the fire raging in the house is there. Mm-hmm. And I think, would like to put forward that there was a fire raging not just in our own nation as far as economic disaster, but also the fire raging in Iraq and the impending doom to the people there who were going to be losing their lives, not to mention our GIs who would also be risking their own lives in the mayhem.
There's also a law in the books, I know, in New York State. I don't know if there's an equivalent with the federal, that if it reads, what is normally considered a criminal act is not when it's done to prevent a greater harm. And clearly that was the case with us.
Okay. And I also read from Bill Quigley that, in fact, there is international law that affords you certain protections. And was this argued in your case?
Article 6, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution states that international treaties are the supreme law of the land, and we have treaties under the Nuremberg Principles and with the UN, with our allies. And some of them go on to say, and I think Claire has that.
And that was Danny Burns and now Claire Grady.
Danny Burns. So keeping in mind that treaties that we do sign and ratify are supreme laws of our land, we know that the real crime is preemptive war. We know that the real crime is killing 100,000 civilians. We know that the real crime is torture. We know that the real crime is distributing depleted uranium on Iraqi people's land, air, water, and that lasts for 2.5 million years. And the real crime is dividing up their resources for U.S. corporations. Those are international war crimes, and that's what we want to put on trial. In taking our action, we know we risked arrest, but that does not mean that we did, and we believed our action was not criminal, but we are upholding the best of law.
And asking the soldiers, the recruiters, not to obey the laws that are illegal. You have a legal right not to obey orders that are against the law, and these are clearly against the law. When you attack another country, when they are in no threat to you, they have not, they had no capable means of being a threat to this country, and you attack and invade, that is a war crime. It's against the law. The war is against the law, and the soldiers do not have to obey those orders.
So
under the Nuremberg Principles, which is basically after World War II, they did the tribunals in Nuremberg, and we basically ran those. The United States pretty much conducted those tribunals.
Right. So this is not just a case, or what's on trial is not just the actions of four Ithaca residents and Catholic workers. You guys purposely do want to put the entire Iraq war on trial. Would that be fair?
I would think that's very definitely true in our case. And we acted out of a sense of moral obligation to tell the Bush administration, to tell our fellow citizens, to tell the people of the world that we believe this war was totally wrong and unjust and immoral, and that we felt we were morally obligated to speak out in a nonviolent way against it and to try to prevent it. And we were part of a worldwide surge of protest, nonviolent protest all over the world. Millions of people worldwide came out in the middle of February and said this war should not happen, must not happen, cannot happen. Mm-hmm. And mass demonstrations in Australia and in this country and in Europe. And we were just part of that groundswell of opposition to the war. And we continue in our opposition to the war as it continues, as it unfolds very tragically with the loss of more and more lives. The loss of the continued degradation of the environment in Iraq, and the continued loss of our own soldiers.
Mm. Now, I know each of you spoke quite eloquently in the Tompkins County in the state case, and perhaps maybe you can speak briefly about that, though it seems that you did just present some of your arguments. What I would like to ask is that according to Bill Quigley's review of your case, you guys were actually denied the chance to enter into the case, expert witnesses, and the testimony of many other acclaimed officials. And just to list a few, I thought it's interesting. Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark, you had hoped would testify about international law. That was denied. You requested to have acclaimed U.S. historian Howard Zinn to testify about civil disobedience. That was denied. Kathy Breen of New York Catholic Worker and Voices in the Wilderness to testify about what it was like in Baghdad before and during the bombardment. That was denied, and that was repeated, and you wanted to also enter in many different international articles that spoke about the perhaps illegality of this war, and all of that was denied. Why? Was there a reason? I want to go back and revisit this first case so we could then situate your case, impending case, in federal court.
I think just briefly,
Mrs. Teresa.
You know, if you go back to that scenario that I posed at the very beginning of the program where, you know, the government does not want to have the fire in the house be visible to the jurors, I think that as we are bringing the war on trial, and absolutely that is why we went to the Army Recruiting Center. It wasn't because we just have this affinity to go and spend time at Army Recruiting Centers. It's because they are absolutely part and parcel for the war machinery to make Iraq's happen, to make Afghanistan's happen. And they are sucking away our poor and those who are economically disadvantaged in our society. And they're being used as cannon fodder in these illegitimate and illegal wars. And so our when we are charged with a crime, we understand that we're innocent until proven guilty, and we take that very seriously, and we expect and understand the jurors to also understand that we are innocent until they can be convinced that somehow we acted with criminal intent. And even in the charge, well, the previous charge was criminal damage to property, and it was clear to 9 out of the 12 that in fact we did not meet up to the qualifications for what it means to damage property in the Tompkins County Court.
And that came as a great surprise, it seemed, to many of the media pundits who were covering the story. They thought for sure that the jury would convict you in a few hours, when in fact the jury was deadlocked. It was ruled a mistrial, and they were in favor of acquittal 9-3.
And in fact, the strongest supporter we heard, when they walked into the deliberations, happened to be a Second World War veteran who stated very clearly that we were innocent and that he was willing to stay as long as it took to keep a not guilty verdict, and that he in fact fought in the Second World War, is what he said, in order to be able to have people like us do what we were doing.
And just to, I think it's important, most of the listeners, they hear voices, and I have the privilege to see you. You do not fit the stereotypical mold of the peaceniks, the activists, and I know Danny has the envious distinction of being the youngest at 43 years old. We have
44.
Actually, I'm the youngest.
Oh, I'm sorry, Teresa. Okay. But we also have mothers, we have fathers, husbands, we have a veteran, Peter himself. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I'm 58 years old, the doyen of the group, and I was served in both the Marine Corps and the Army, the Marines in Vietnam. I was there December of 1968 through November of 1969. And also in the Army. I was about not quite 3 years in the Marine Corps and a little about 4.5 years in the Army. So, but in the Army, I was mostly stationed in Turkey. So anyway, I am a veteran, and one of my motivations for participating in the action on March 17th was my sense of obligation to other young men and women who would be recruited through such recruiting stations such as the one we went to, and would be given false promises, would be lured into signing up to become Marines or members of the Army, and would be sent to fight an unjust, illegal war in which they would be forced to kill or be killed. In a war that need not happen, a tragic mistake, a war that was promoted and, I don't know, Mr. Bush has been proven now to have lied consistently about the weapons of mass destruction, which were the main reason given for the war in the first place. So,
And that's something we'll talk about in just a couple minutes, all of the evidence that has surfaced since your first case, which seems to bode very well for your defense. But now I want to say, okay, so if we had a mistrial, and I believe as the Tompkins County judge said that he was going to file your motion to dismiss this case because he didn't think that it could be re-prosecuted. Okay, perhaps you can. How exactly did it move from the state court to the federal court? Perhaps that is a way that we can address this.
Well, the DA in Ithaca, George Dentes, said that he was dropping the case in the county where we live because he was assured that the feds would pick it up. And
okay. He couldn't get a conviction in the county of Tompkins, where he was empowered by the people, and the people represented by the jury refused to convict, so he removed it from the people who actually elected him and empowered him, which I think is a sort of not an ethical move, personally.
So do you think then that it was a move just to remove it from perhaps a more liberal a place
exactly.
like Ithaca? Or
yes.
do you think the feds would have picked this up anyways? That's my question.
Well, we'll never know that. And okay. and just to keep in mind, it's not necessarily that Binghamton or the five counties that the jury pool will be taken from now, from this district, are any more or less for or against the war.
Right.
Because Tompkins County, Ithaca, is mainly, I would say, Democrat or Green, but it's surrounded by pro-war Republicans, conservatives.
Right.
So this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. It's just his perception of it might not necessarily be the reality of it.
And Dente's actually, in stating and acknowledging that he would never be able to get a conviction in our county, acknowledging that, he then said that he went to the federal prosecutor to ask for them to pick it up. So we know that much. Whether or not the federal government would have done that anyway is unclear.
Which is clearly a huge victory for the anti-war movement in Tompkins County, that they could not get a conviction, and he admitted it. And we're hoping that we could bring that same kind of victory for the anti-war movement to this area also.
Okay, Claire, did you?
Will we also find it notable that the head of the federal prosecutor's office is Gonzalez, who paid
the attorney general.
The attorney general, so he's the boss of these guys that are following them. And we find that in keeping with his practices, who would basically legalize torture and pave the way for human rights violations. So that just deserves note.
Yeah, Gonzalez wrote the. The policy authorizing torture to detainees, to the Iraqis, and to Afghanistan. And we don't know all of it. We just know what's been exposed by completely out of their control. They would have. And the idea, I think there's a conflict of interest for this prosecutor to stand there working for this man, representing this man who is clearly breaking the law, has broken the law, put our country in much more danger, especially our soldiers if they're ever captured now. Their chances of surviving that are much smaller, and for him to prosecute us for us asking the soldiers not to obey his illegal orders, or which were resulted from his thing, I think there's a conflict of interest there. And as far as the prosecutor goes, I don't recognize any authority that he has.
Right. Well, I know recent headlines suggest that the torture scandal continues to deepen and that they're now going after General Sanchez, who actually wrote in memos approving such tactics, and they're hoping that this can be traced directly to Donald Rumsfeld, which I'm sure if they do enough data.
The latest one is okaying the use of dogs. The Arabs apparently have a great fear of dogs, and they use that in interrogations, which... You know, is torture.
It's
it was authorized by this country,
law.
And it was written by Gonzalez. Gonzalez is the Attorney General of the United States, and the feds, the federal prosecutor, works basically underneath him. It's not his direct boss, but it's kind of like, so I think it's important for them to get a conviction with us and to bring it to trial because we're, you know, just being on the air now, pointing out the fact that... this is what they're doing. They're torturing people. They're probably still torturing people. It's nothing new. In war, atrocities happen on both sides. And to think that we're going to go to Iraq and no atrocities are going to happen on our side is naive from anybody. Because in the history of war, it always has happened, and it always causes harm. And these guys that committed it and these people that are soldiers that are over there, they're not going to be okay when they come back after this.
Right.
They're not. They were ordered to do it, and they're not going to be okay for a long time.
We had an ex-Sergeant Marines, Jimmy Massey, here a few weeks ago, and in our discussion, one of six of returning veterans from the Afghanistan and Iraq wars are now seeking treatment at Veteran Clinton's for mental trauma. Other issues about the case that now appears in front of the federal court, the charges are different. Originally, you were charged with criminal damage to property in excess of $250. Now you are charged with federal conspiracy by force, intimidation, and threat to impede an officer of the United States. Now, this carries a punishment of up to 6 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. You're also charged with the original criminal damage to property and two counts of trespass. Again, charges punishable by up to an additional 2 years in prison. what else is changed? What else is different? Is the procedure different? Are you still going to represent yourself here in this federal court? Have you been warned that this will be far more difficult? I'm curious. How has the argument changed? Not the argument. How has the context changed?
We won't know exactly until we get there, but for sure people say, these are the feds. They don't fool around. They go for the jugular. And I think it's important to note that all the way from war, torture, to this kind of tactic, it's fear that they play on. And so I think we go into this with a sense of peace and knowing that we are doing our best to uphold our responsibility to resist war. And we don't know until we get there what's different. And we'd like to meet everybody and do what we can to testify to what we know and see and hear about this war. And
are you still choosing to represent yourselves?
Yes.
Yes. Correct.
There's also a clear tactic there by the federal prosecutors to prevent by using fear tactics to stop other people from acting, to stop other people from doing civil disobedience and following their conscience and doing what is right to prevent a crime, and by charging us with 6 years in prison on this, it sounds enormous. It's like, wow.
Right.
I went into the recruiting center where if you hold a cup up, about an inch of blood in a cup of my own blood, and I poured it on the ground, I poured it on the flag, and I poured it on a sign that said $15,000 sign-up bonus for college. And all of that is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
To frighten other people from acting, I think, is a clear idea of what they're doing.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take just about a minute break here, and we're going to come back and talk about what has changed in the public court of opinion since your case was dismissed. If you're just joining us, this is Tariq Abdelazim. I'm here with St. Patrick Four, and we'll be back in just a minute. Hi, we're back with St. Patrick Four. This is Tariq Abdelazim, listening to Civil Discourse on WHRW 90.5 FM. We have hopefully about 10 more minutes. We're going to run a little longer. The news gentlemen have been very kind to give us that extra allotment. A couple things I wanted to talk about. One thing, and then we'll get to some of the issues that were brought up during the break. Things have changed since the case was dismissed. I think the most obvious has been the different reports that have come out. Your case was dismissed in April 2004. Since then, we've had the David Kaye report, which said we had it all wrong. And that was in January 2004. But also we've had the Charles Dolfer report in October 2004, which again repeated the same claims, that our intelligence was wrong. So all of the claims that were made for this war have turned out to be either dubious or outright fabrications, and I wouldn't discount that latter suggestion. Also, we see the public opinion shifting dramatically. All of you find this, I would suggest, very favorably.
Well, before the war, most of the information that has come out on those reports was well known, but not in the corporate media. If you listen to Democracy Now!, they had several reports, The Guardian, The Independent, these, which are English newspapers, which you can get on the web, which you might notice that there are no advertisements on their web pages. The corporate media didn't cover it. Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector, head weapons inspector, said they were qualifiably Is that the correct word?
Qualitatively
disarmed. They did have the chemicals. If they, in fact, did have any left, that they had run out their shelf life and were basically useless to them as a weapon. We knew that. We knew that the so-called uranium in Africa,
in Niger.
That was debunked before it ever came out in the New York Times.
That was presented in the State of Union address.
That was on Democracy Now!, which is, by the way, at 12 o'clock in the afternoon here in Binghamton on the sister station of WSKG. It's a jazz station, but they do break in at noon every day. There are other places you can get, I would say, not corporate media, and you can get it on the web, commondreams.org, which is pretty good. They carry a local columnist.
Antiwar.com and anti-war.com. Local media, Binghamton Independent Media Center.
Yes, of course.
I think another thing that's changed since April of 2004, when our case was declared a mistrial, is the number of war dead that has continued to accumulate. As now it's over 1,500. And of the 50 or so dead from New York State, 45 of them are minorities, are from either African American, Latino, but they represent minorities. And I think that that's something that's working in our favor too, that the tragic loss of life of young men and women who should never have gone into this war, and the higher the body count gets, the more we feel justified and feel right in what we did. And all we were trying to do was say this war, with millions of other people around the world, as I pointed out earlier, was to say that this war must not happen.
And the catastrophic cost of these Iraqi civilians continues. The Lancet report had as high as 100,000. So that also, I'm sure, is in your mind when you continue your case.
Right, and we're not making this. If anybody wants to question us, that's fine. Write down these words, depleted uranium, and look them up on the internet. Google it. Scott Ritter and
the
other terms,
costofwar.com.
Check it out for yourself. Please do. The truth can be found, and it's not on CNN and it's not on CBS.
As Peter put it earlier, he was just talking about the loss of life and that how these young men and women should not have been sent over in the first place. And we're hearing now from a lot of Vets for Peace, the Iraqi war vets are coming back saying why they signed up and were recruited, and that a lot of them, the biggest issue is money, payment for college tuition. And as of today, just before we arrived here, $160,711,400,000 have been spent on this dirty war.
And meanwhile, I just have to add, just recently here in Binghamton, the local Veterans Services Center could not procure $16,000 to continue the services, essential services they provide to veterans that seem to have been forgotten.
God forgive us. That number that I just gave breaks down for a full four-year scholarship in public university for 8 million students in our country, okay? So if we're wondering where all our money is to educate our people, it's going to kill others and to maim our own, and both in their hearts and minds and as well as their bodies.
One thing that I think is interesting, you talked about corporate media. Have you solicited interest from any major media outlets?
We keep them up to date, but they don't call us back.
Okay. Do you think that will change now that this is in a federal court?
It's possible. Our local paper, the Ithaca Journal, which is a Gannett News Service, and WSKG have been much better about picking this up and giving much more content in their story about what we did. In the last go-around, we experienced, well, they didn't come to the trial itself. They came to the beginning and the end, and they didn't report what we were talking about, which was, to my sense, a grave injustice. The people of Ithaca, unless they got to come into the courtroom or hear us, they were under a false impression about what was going on, and actually believed that the jury was a runaway jury. In fact, the jury was following the law, when nine of them wanted to acquit.
Right.
So anyway, we find much better reception this go around.
Right. Well, I'm delighted again that you guys accepted the invitation to come here. I also volunteer at the Binghamton Independent Media Center. The website is binghamtonpmc.org, and we will certainly provide updates and timely additions to the events as they unfold. We'll be watching this very closely. Do any of you have final comments? We just have a few minutes here, and I thought I'd give you the chance, if anything was missed, to please feel free to...
Well, first I'd like to give an email address out for myself. If anybody wants to get a hold of us, we'd love to come and speak to any group that would have us. If social studies teachers would like us to come in, whether in the high schools or in the colleges.
Churches.
And churches, especially churches.
Historians.
And the email address is, now that you've had time to get a pen... Okay, we've got the pen. db6076@isp.com. So it's Daniel Burns, db6076@isp.com. Thanks, I always get it wrong.
I'll also provide that information on the website because a copy of this show will be archived and available for future listening, as well as previous shows, and that will be on my website, www.modocpress.com. That's M-O-D-O-C Press, one word. And I'll also include Danny's information there if anybody wanted to bring him to speak or any of the other four defendants.
I would like to say, Tark, that thank you for bringing
yes,
us here.
Much.
And it's exciting to get to know more people here in Binghamton, and that we're all in this together. This is a journey for truth, for peace, and justice. And it's an ongoing one, and it's just great to work together with more people. So we welcome meeting the jurors and the other folks in Binghamton.
Wonderful. Okay, I think we're going to close out the show here today. I just think it's important to remind folks that we do have four Catholic workers here. Recently, the Pope passed away. There's no surprise to that. We are going to hear eulogy after eulogy about this wonderful man, and most of it will be worthy. I think one thing should not be forgotten. The opposition by the Vatican to this war was decisive and clear.
Amen.
The Pope sent one of the most important prelates of the Vatican, Cardinal Pio Laghi, on a special mission to President Bush, carrying a letter signed by the Pope stating that this was a truly unjust war. So please keep that in mind as the flowery eulogies continue. Thank you all for coming here to join us
today. Thank you so much, Tom.
Please come down to the courtroom. It's a public courtroom.
Bring your identification. Photo ID is necessary to enter the federal building.
Quick question.
Sure.
Do we have a start date on the trial?
We will in about maybe 3 weeks. We'll know.
We're okay. Hoping it's June.
Okay. And we'll keep that posted on the Binghamton IMC website.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.